in life that you can stop, and there's certain things in life that can't be stopped. Let's go.
It's fitting that we start off with this music, really.
Oh, we may as well keep going with it. Why not? I have no problem doing that at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah, welcome, everyone, to the Final Play podcast. As you can probably tell by the music, it's our ongoing chat about The Last Dance and the last two episodes, episode 5 and 6, which just before we got on, we were just saying it tended to lean more towards the serious side, at least.
Yeah, these two were a little more sort of, got a little bit deeper into the story and not as lighthearted as what the especially the last two were. It sort of delved a little bit into more of who Michael is and what he was all about. And you know, everybody wants to be like Mike.
Yeah, and that's sort of how it started. Like, everybody wanted to be like Mike. I mean, the fifth episode, I should say, the whole Michael Jordan meeting Jerry Seinfeld, just having a random conversation. It was just...
That was great.
It was, and like, you know, and obviously Jerry was, that was the 90s, so Jerry was the star back then too as well.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Everybody
he was one of the biggest TV stars getting around. It was Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. Like, Jordan didn't seem non-fussed about it, but he was pointing to the other guys like, yeah, they always watch the episodes and all that, but yeah. It was just, well, but
I thought was the best about that was Phil Jackson comes in and goes, all right, everyone, that's it. And that's it. Everybody has to bail out of there. So Phil Jackson's the ringleader. That was great. He's just like, all right, that's it, everybody. Time for everybody to get the hell out. Yeah, not in those words, but yeah, that's basically what he's saying. I don't care if it's Jerry Seinfeld or not. Time for you to leave.
but I guess it sort of started out when it was all sort of, to me, it centered around Jordan's last All-Star game. And sort of foreshadowing, I guess, Kobe Bryant a bit. It was Kobe's first All-Star game and MJ's last when he was 19 years old. So
19. And a lot of the locker room talk was that they just knew that Kobe. They just knew that he was different. They just knew Kobe was just on a different level, even at 19.
Yeah, 19 years old. That's what I mean. And they were a bit, look, Jordan sort of, the arrogance sort of came across, I guess, at the sort of start. But, I mean, from all accounts during that, he, like Kobe said, he asked him every question. He answered every question. And he said, I gave him his number and everything. So.
No, that's right. Yeah. He said everything that he, you know, that he knows and that he learned as a kid, you know, or, you know, essentially as a kid, but, you know, at an early age playing, he learned from Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see the uncanny resemblance in game, you know, the athleticism, the turnaround jump shot, the everything. It's just, it's crazy what Kobe, if you look at his career as a whole, what he turned into and the resemblance of Michael's game is uncanny.
Yeah. And then, you know, just that mid-range shot, that's every time I watch MJ and Kobe, it's eerily similar. Like the fadeaway, the sort of
the turnaround jump shot. Yeah. That's right. Even the free throw style.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same. It's just it's crazy. He's modeled his game, just everything, on what Michael did.
Yeah, and Kobe freely admitted it. He said, you know, he wanted to be the best, and he had to talk to the best.
And that's right. And yeah.
It's sort of. You know, it was sort of good. I don't know how you felt. It was sort of good seeing Kobe, and then obviously at the start they said, you know, that episode was dedicated to Kobe and loving memory of Kobe and all that. But yeah. I don't know, it was good. Yeah, it was good to sort of see, you know, him having the input into that. So
no, that's right. And apparently that interview was only fairly recent as well. So the last little bit of editing was only done mid January. Yeah. So yeah, that sort of hits a nerve a little bit with everybody in the basketball community as well. Once they've seen that, I love the little acknowledgement between Michael and Kobe as they're sort of passing each other in the hallways of MSG. They just sort of give each other a little glance. And a little fist bump as they walk past, and that's it. That's it. And then we'll see each other out on the court.
The Bulls then had back to back titles, but then they came up in that third title in the 92 finals up against Portland Trailblazers, and my God, did they demolish the Trailblazers!
Oh my Lord! That was the thing too. That was one thing that Michael comes out and says too, that. Yeah, there was a lot of comparisons between him and Clyde Drexler, and he felt that as the utmost disrespect. And that's nothing against Clyde. That's nothing against Clyde Drexler. Clyde Drexler was a great player. He was on that dream team.
Clyde Drexler
was a great player, but the comparisons for those two, you don't want to be disrespectful to Clyde, but going up against Michael Jordan, that's a hard call.
And it didn't piss him off, but he just didn't want to be compared, and it spurred him on, which is absolutely ridiculous.
No, and that was it. And he just he cooked him every night. Like, he just went at Clyde. And that was nothing. That was part of the thing that I felt a little bit sorry for Clyde. Like, he didn't do any of that. No. That's the people in the media that are sort of going on.
Yeah.
And that's the man that he just goes and just cooks him every game.
I suppose how old was Clyde? Because it just sort of seemed every time I was watching him, it's probably because Jordan was just demolishing him. But Clyde looked like a bit long on the tooth around that 92 finals too.
I think he might have had one year on him. Okay. He just looked like that. I think if you had to put hair on MJ in those years too, he might have been receding a little bit. But that's just how he looked. And that's just how Clyde Drexler looked. Like that's just how he looked. Like I said, he'd been in the league for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
So he was drafted the year before, I think, what Akeem and those guys were. So yeah. I could be wrong with that. It might have been 85 he was drafted. No, he was drafted. Yeah, sorry, he was. He was drafted the year before. He was drafted in 83 because the 84 draft, and that's what Portland did.
Yeah.
Portland said, we don't need a shooting guard. We have Clyde Drexler.
Yeah. Yep.
We don't need him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It transitioned pretty then well, I thought, into probably arguably the biggest thing about, or to me, in NBA pop culture, and that was Jordan's rise as a shoe icon.
Shoes.
It's not even that, we'll talk about it in a second. It's not even that, he has Nike shoes. It's that he has shoes called Jordans and people know what Jordans are. It's not like,
But it's its own brand in itself. It's almost completely separate from Nike now. If you sign, you either sign, obviously with Adidas, you can sign with Nike, or you can sign with the Jordan brand.
Yeah.
And that's they're still made by Nike, but they're a separate entity.
Yeah. And obviously everybody was coming after him hard. Converse were obviously the first purely because they were the sponsors of the NBA. They had everybody.
They were the shoe. Everybody had Converse.
Yeah, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, everybody. Yeah, correct.
Everybody had Cons.
And then he really wanted to go to Adidas, but...
And hearing that, I was stunned by that. I really was.
In terms of... his choice, or just in terms of
just that's who he would have preferred to deal with. But apparently, they were in, the company was in disarray. They weren't doing very well financially.
It wasn't a great offer, too, apparently, compared to the Nike's $250,000 offer.
No, that's right. And as a rookie, like, that's crazy, to get that. Oh. To get that sort of shoe deal. So who is this kid? And and MJ, he pushed hard for Adidas. Pushed hard. And it ended up being his mum that basically said, no, go and listen to Nike and listen to their deal. Just go and listen.
Well, it was also Dave and David Falk. It was Falk's idea.
That's right, and his agent as well. Well, he would have been fishing around for the best deal as well.
Of course, he was fanatical. David Falk was fanatical with, he had a lot of tennis stars on his roster, on his agency roster.
So
he probably had a really good relationship already with Nike, but the deal was, it was 150 grand more. But again, Nike at that time were dealing in tennis shoes. They weren't dealing in basketball shoes at all. Yeah. So,
And the crazy thing was, like, after the meeting and after he'd signed, he'd done the deal with Nike, it sort of come out that they wanted around about the $3 million for the four year contract. That they would like to have made $3 million for that four year contract. In the first year, they make $126 million.
Yeah.
And 1984. Holy moly, that is crazy cash.
It begs a question. I mean, I've always talked about this later, but it just begs the question of what the hell were Adidas thinking? Oh. Like, that's a billion-dollar mistake, especially when Jordan won them. Like, that's a billion-dollar mistake.
That's right. The whoever the CEO is there, so it's like, sorry, Michael. We just don't require your services as a brand name for our shoe at the moment. But come back to us. We'll listen to you after a couple of years in the league. We'll see how you go there, Junior.
Well, I think the deal was also obviously on the top of the 250 is that he would have his own shoe line, and those shoe lines started as the Air Jordans.
As Air Jordans,
because they have that new Air Sole technology. So it was just funny then seeing your Nas, your Justin Timberlake, and all those famous people then coming in and just saying how. Just how joy, like the
that's,
shoes.
That's what it was. It's to me, like you said, it's an unbelievable global icon now, not just for basketball shoes, as casual shoes for leisure shoes, for a better term.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And he played. And he played in them. He played. It circles back to that. Last game that he had at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And he's like, I wore Jordan 1s the first time I played here. And he said that was his favorite arena to play at besides the United Center. But he loved playing at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Just loved playing there. So he's like, right, for the last time that I'm going to be here, I'll wear Jordan 1s. And, that probably – it's not as if he played badly. But I think his feet told the story after that.
Yeah, blood soaked. What did it say? Blood soaked feet. Well, they had to have been blood soaked feet because then he had blood soaked socks.
He was even in the post game interview, he's just like, my feet are killing me right now.
He just had to take them off because he needed to take them off.
Oh, he needed. Yeah, they had to go.
But I mean, that's purely because. In this day and age, and we were just talking about it earlier anyway, that shoes change over time, and Jordan's probably the perfect example. They're more designed around casual wear sometimes than actual basketball.
I think the Jordan 1s are probably more of your casual slash leisure type shoe. I think most of the other older versions are still functional basketball shoes.
Yeah, I think so. But I guess it's just interesting that he had blood soaked. I just he never sort of explained why, but I just assumed it was because the shoe had changed so much over its time.
Yeah, and that's the thing. See now that they would be making Jordan 1s, I guess you could sort of still play in them, whereas back then they wouldn't have been remaking them with new technology. So it would have been the older technology, and he just would have, his feet would have got used to newer shoes all the time, and then he's going back and put these old ones on and be like, oh, okay, this is different.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, I suppose. I didn't think of it sort of that way, but it then, because he sort of just signed the deal, and again, did you like, we've talked about this before, but do you like the back and forth between, you know, going back to 84 when he signed the deal, then going to 92, and like,
I'm not so much, it's just part and parcel of what this documentary is doing. Obviously that's the way that they sort of edited it out and lined it out, this was how they're going to do. Sometimes it sort of makes it a little bit hard to keep track of, but overall they're doing a good job of what they're doing with the rewind. So I'm just calling rewinds and fast forwards.
They then obviously fast tracked it to the 93 finals against the Phoenix Suns. Charles Barkley, as an example. I forgot. I mean, it was Charles Barkley's MVP that year. He was the league MVP.
He was the MVP of the league.
I forgot. I mean, obviously, because we watch him on, inside the NBA. Completely different guy, but I forgot. I mean,
he's still got that same personality.
I just forgot. I honestly really forgot his athleticism.
Chuck. Yeah, the round man of rebound.
Yeah.
Like Charles Barkley, he was unbelievable. He had great handles. Yeah, and he was only about 6'6", 6'7". And he was a round, you know, sort of dude. Like, he wasn't the most athletic looking guy.
Nah.
But he had it all. He had the low post game. If you left him open for three, he could drain that. He was a good rebounder. He could flush it down on you if needed be. Like, he had a great all-round type game, Charles Barkley.
Unfortunately, Dan Marley and Jordan Scorn, through no fault of his own. So another
Clyde... Once again, through no fault of his own.
Yeah. Purely because it was Jerry Krause's favourite players, Marley. That was really the only reason. It's all he needed. That was the reason.
That's all the spark that Jordan needed. That's all he needed.
I just don't think
he was very happy with Charles getting the MVP that year.
Well, that's like, just exactly what I was just about to say. He was a little bit upset with that. Yeah.
Yeah, and listening to interviews with Charles Barkley after this episode, I think he was on Get Up, on ESPN, and he said people sort of confuse the best player in the league with the best player that season.
Yep.
Yeah, you compare it to now. Everybody knows that it's probably a two-horse race between LeBron and Giannis Antetokounmpo for the best player in the league right now. But it's whoever has the best season, that's who gets the MVP, a la, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Giannis. You know what I mean? Like Kevin Durant. Yeah, it goes to the – everybody knows that Michael's the best player in the game, but it just goes on who had the better season. Chuck had an unbelievable season. They had the best record in the league.
Yeah.
They had home court advantage for those finals.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to do it. It's not like this, and I've always hated this, the stupid Ballon d'Or in soccer or football, depending on what you want to call it. And that to me is that's the best player. That's the best player who's going in the world. That's really not the best player of the season
that just turns into a popularity contest.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't like that.
So I like the way, Charles had the best season, but yes, Jordan said, okay, fine, you can have that. I'm going to get this then.
Right. He's just like, yeah, you can have the regular season MVP, but I'll just have the finals MVP. And as they sort of go through it with those finals, they sort of get a little bit more into the games themselves. Yeah, they get a little bit more statistical with it, with They basically come out, game one, the win for Chicago. Game two, the win for Chicago in Phoenix. So they've waltzed into Phoenix and won two games on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, righto. So the next game, game three, goes into triple overtime. Like, could you imagine the fans in that arena of an NBA Finals game going into triple overtime?
Yeah.
And Charles Barkley says, I was not going to let my team lose.
Yeah.
I was not going to let my team lose. Unfortunately, game four comes around. Chicago gets the win, so they go up 3-1. Phoenix gets the win on the road. So it's a topsy-turvy sort of final series. A lot of road victories in it. Yeah. And then, Michael sort of says at the end there, when they go back to Phoenix for game six, because game six and game seven are in Phoenix. And he's just like, I'm only packing one suit. Because we're not staying for a game seven. I'm only packing one suit. So we're winning in game six.
That's crazy. Arrogance, but that's just how it is.
Is it arrogance? Is it confidence? Like it's a little bit of both.
Bit of both, and that's fine. You can have that. It then scaled back.
It turns into the famous, John Paxson open three.
Yeah.
Like that ball that wasn't supposed to get there.
Yeah.
And that was a pass down onto the low block down to Horace Grant. He turns around and he just sees a wide open John Paxson. The thing that actually you go circle back to before that. And the thing that stunned me about it was they were up. Phoenix were up four. And there's about 40 seconds to go.
Mm.
They just score. I think they go up. No, I think they go up 90. It's 98-94. Jordan just takes he gets the inbound. Yeah, it's game six. 40 seconds to go. It's counting down. Jordan just goes coast to coast and just waltzes through the lane.
Yeah.
And puts a layup in to get them within two. And it's like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Did they just let him go coast to coast? He wasn't even going fast or anything of that. They just let him. Nobody picked him up and just let him go coast to coast. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah.
And he just waltzes into the lane, puts up a layup, and gets him within two. And that's the play that sets up the John Paxson three. Because if that doesn't happen, or if that takes more time off the clock. Then it's a totally different game, but they just let him waltz right down the court and into the lane. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous. It then sort of circled a little bit then back, we'll go a year back to the 1992 Barcelona Olympics, which, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to circle back to that, but the biggest, obviously, is the famous 1992 Dream Team. Which is, it depends who you talk to, but I'll say arguably the best ever assembled squad ever.
Oh, no, there's no doubt. Depends
who you talk to, but I have no doubt in my mind. I mean,
there's no doubt.
The players that. The
greatest assembly of talent.
Probably except for one, and we talked about it last week with Isaiah Thomas, but. I mean,
well, he comes back into it again. I thought they'd sort of buried that little bit of an angle during episode four, but all of a sudden Isaiah Thomas sort of pops up again and says, I met the criteria and everything, and the thing that like not so much the way that they go into it is everybody thinks it's all on Jordan why Isaiah Thomas didn't make the Dream Team. But you got to think back too. He had some frosty relationships with other people in that Dream Team.
Magic, he certainly did.
Bird, Pippen.
Yep.
So it's if it's a collective thing, Michael doesn't say that it was all on me or I didn't have anything to do with it. He just said it wasn't all me, and it would have been everybody. Well, who was the coach? It was Chuck Daly.
Chuck Daly, the Detroit Pistons coach, correct?
Yeah,
so
the Pistons coach.
When I go through the team, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, John Stockton, Karl Malone, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin, David Robinson, Charles Barkley, and then they have the extra
Christian Laettner.
They came up with a rule, I guess, to say that because it was always played with just what would you call it? Just like a college team?
They're amateur team. Amateurs.
They kept one amateur player, and that was at that time was Christian Laettner. So because like there was two other players that was, you know, that could have been in, one being Shaquille O'Neal. The other I've lost now. I can't think of who it was supposed to be.
Well, the other one you would have thought just out of the college ranks that was probably going to be drafted that year, you think would have been Alonzo Mourning as well.
Mourning, but, yeah.
Do you know, they already had Patrick Ewan and David Robinson. So those two get in there, they're just going to be riding the pine. You know, yeah, Laettner can't get it. Laettner was 6'10", but he had silky smooth skills. He played the game as a guard. You know, he wasn't just sort of, you know, Shaquille O'Neal was sort of that, not so much one dimensional, but, you know, you put him in the low post and he's just going to dominate everybody. But Laettner had a more rounded game that would probably suit international rules better than what like Shaquille O'Neal or Alonzo Mourning would.
Plus like
their games.
Like you sort of said earlier, he was, you know, nearly one of the best, if not the best, college player at that time. So that's who they decided to go with.
That's right. And that was the thing. Like his success in college didn't transition into the NBA, like really at all.
No.
You know, coming off, you know, the few seasons that he had there, at Duke. I mean, you would have thought that a big guy like that, yeah. Could you imagine if he had to come in, even if it was 10 years later, a big guy like that, you know, in the mold of someone like Dirk Nowitzki or somebody like that, you know what I mean? Like his game would have transitioned better in this NBA than what it did, you know, in the NBA of the mid 90s.
Yeah, correct. So yeah, the team was picked. I did a little bit of research with that. With that team, Chuck Daly actually went to Jordan and said he wanted him to be the face of the team for that Olympics. He declined straight away.
As you would.
So they obviously end up doing the co-captains of Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, which, I mean, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. I kind of would have put them, probably because they're coming towards the end anyway, Jordan. Jordan, the face, okay, but, and he would have been regardless captain or not, he was the face. Anyway, that's
exactly
the whole
whether you like it or not, he was the face.
He was the face, and he was, you know, well, he was one of the best. I mean, I suppose they were all great players. I mean, to me, that Charles Barkley was the best player of that whole series. I thought, or that whole games, personally. Looking back on the records of the Olympics.
Well, his game. Like I said, you know, it's a well-rounded game, and even when they came here to see, you know, in 2000, Charles Barkley was still getting around.
Yeah, true. So, it then sort of patterned into that. A lot of people are calling it different, but basically they had a scrimmage game, just basically a warm-up game between each other in some random Barcelona stadium. Everyone keeps calling it the best game that was never aired, or the greatest game never aired. did you know, or did you want to know who the teams were, or you probably had a rough idea who the teams were?
I think I sort of had a rough idea who was on whose team, but we may as well sort of get it out there.
So it was. I've got to make sure I get this correct first, because. I know. Well, so it was Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, Christian Laettner. There was a couple of the people that didn't want to play in it, and I'm pretty sure it was Patrick Ewing and Larry Bird. I don't think Larry played in it at all, if I remember, or Clyde. So I'm going to have a quick look now, to be honest. I'm pretty sure, yeah, I'm very certain Larry didn't play. Well, a couple didn't play purely due to injury. There was no real, like...
Well, they would have been saving their legs too, I suppose. But, don't worry, Magic was playing.
Magic was dead. Well, Magic
was playing.
Magic was on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
He apparently he, yeah, like he was one of the captains basically, so to speak. So Magic played purely because I think it was just sort of a power play, to be completely honest.
Well,
okay, I've got over here now. Finally, God, that took forever. So Jordan's team was Scottie Pippen and Larry Bird, along with Karl Malone and Patrick Ewing. So that was his five. So God damn, that's a good five. God. Magic's team was Chris Mullin, Christian Laettner, Charles Barkley, and David Robertson. So kind of interesting, actually, when now that I look at the team, like how quickly Magic's team got out to a very, very quick lead.
Yeah, whether or not it was a fact of one team was taking it seriously and the other team was taking it as a scrimmage. Until people started chirping on the court.
And that was Magic. Magic was just feeding Jordan the whole. It just seemed like the whole game.
That was awesome. It was one foul that Jordan gets and he starts yelling at. Oh, it's just like the NBA. He gets all the calls. He takes the ball and he hurls it into the grandstands.
Yeah.
Like and Jordan says, this is the 90s, you know. It's just like, oh, what's that got to do with anything? It's just a major back and forth between Magic and Michael. And like you said, yeah, that they'd sort of got out to a bit of an early lead. I think they were up
eight.
Something like that. They were up eight. And it was just after that, it was go time.
Yeah, they were up eight, and then Jordan's team came back and won by 40-36 in a 17-4 run. fueled by jumpers, drives, and trash talk.
I think trash talk would have been first.
Yeah, trash talk was definitely first, and Jordan, he'd played off that kind of stuff really his whole career, but. It's just, I guess, for Magic, when he come out, and just sort of realised, that Michael Jordan is the best player. Cut to what you were talking about on the bus.
that's right. They said, they all get on the bus and everything's all very silent. They're all heading back to the hotel and everything's all very silent. And then Magic looks over at Charles Barkley and just says, well, I guess we shouldn't have pissed him off then. And then everybody just starts roaring with laughter. And then the bus gets back to, everybody sort of gets talking and everything like that. So it sort of lightened the mood, so to speak, after a pretty sort of, pretty hardcore sort of scrimmage that had some footage of, which, a lot of stuff you probably wouldn't see that.
No, that's right. Yeah, so I'm surprised that footage sort of was available. It ended up being probably the better game that they played over there, considering every game they played Cuba first and won by 79. that was just a ridiculous. Then they played Canada and won by 44. Then Panama by 60. Argentina by 41. A slightly more competitive game in Puerto Rico, winning only by 38 points. And then in the gold medal game against Venezuela, they won by 47 points. So, yeah.
It's crazy, yeah. and they go into with Michael and Scotty and Tony Kukoc as well, with the Croatian team as they sort of get into that. Kukoc was drafted in 1990, and he decided to stay in Europe. Obviously, Croatia wasn't going through the best of times. And he didn't really sort of want to seem like, a deserter to his country. So he sort of stuck it out in Europe for a little bit. And Jerry Krause, Jerry Krause had sort of, had scouted him for a long time and basically said that he's going to be the future of the Chicago Bulls.
This is when the whole Pippen.
Michael and Scotty got a little, they didn't, that sort of pissed them off a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess they just say, right, we'll show Jerry Krause, you know, the future. And they took it right at him.
In that first game, yeah, they won by 33, 103 to 70, and he ended up only getting 4 points and a couple of assists in that first game.
And then once again, through no fault of Tony Kukoc's.
Oh my God, he was.
Yeah. And they just went out there 19 or 20. It was crazy. Yeah.
Oh, they attacked, and it wasn't. It was just the two. It was Pippen and Jordan.
That's right. It was a tag team. It wasn't just.
It was literally a tag team. They really took it to him in that first game. But then in the gold medal game against Croatia, he ended up playing really good at the end there. I thought Tony Kukoc.
I guess he sort of knew what was not so much what was coming, but I guess he sort of better prepared himself for what was coming. He sort of probably wasn't as nervous as what he was when he first played, as everybody probably would have been when they were playing the Dream Team. But he sort of lived up to a little bit of the hype. Yeah, even though he didn't probably have the most glorious career when he come to the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he was a very integral part of that second three-peat for Chicago.
Oh, big time. And interesting enough,
as we fast forward too, as well, I'm pretty sure that in those 98 finals against Utah, he starts every game for Dennis Rodman. He starts every game.
He did start every game, because I always remember seeing him, Pippen, and Jordan on the court. Jordan was always a big, but I was thinking, why is Pippen and Kukoc on there? Because I'm assuming Pippen then got slotted back to power forward. And Kukoc probably played it small forward. Only because of the frame, I'm assuming.
Scotty would have held the ball more as well. He would have been bringing the ball up a lot more. But that would have been their closing lineup as well. They would have played Kukoc at center. Rodman, Scotty, Michael, and Ron Harper. So and even to a lesser extent, you know, as you sort of go into it, even in the 97 series against Utah. The closing team is got Steve Kerr and not Ron Harper. So that's just those little tweaks that Phil Jackson, you know, he's not set in stone that's what he's going to do, you know, with his lineups.
It then sort of segued, right, I don't know. It ended up being really segueing right into episode 6, where episode 6 to me, I got a bit serious, because it focused right at the start, back to 1993, when the Bulls were zeroing in on that first repeat, and it then started to sort of tip into Jordan's, we'll say, gambling habits, so to speak.
Well, and like he says, you know, he has interviews with people, and he said, I don't have a gambling problem. I have a competition problem. Yeah, he's not going out there and losing all his money and then trying to catch up by gambling more. He just likes betting on things. He bets on golf. He bets on blackjack. There's a story that's told by the director Jason Ayres on the Jalen and Jacoby after show, which airs pretty much straight up afterwards. They're going to the Jordan Brand Classic in Brooklyn. So he's doing an interview with Jordan. This was a couple of years ago when he was doing the interviews with Jordan. So he's in the back of a Range Rover with Michael, and Michael sort of looks over and he goes, I bet we see 10 pairs of Jordans on the way to the arena. And Jason, he's just like, okay. And they're going over the Brooklyn Bridge, and it's, oh, yeah, there's a couple of pairs. So they're at about 4 pairs by the time they're getting close to the Barclays Center. It's the Jordan Brand Classic. What do you think people are going to be wearing? Jordan Brand. You know what I mean? Like he put a bet out there that he knew instantly that he was going to win, but that's just who he was.
He loved the thrill of competition. That's all it was. Yeah. And
it's not, he until now, even up until now.
I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, just because he has it, you know, in their eyes, again, we have it. David Aldridge on there put it perfectly. You know, a 10 grand bet for him is like a $10 bet for us common folk.
That's like a 10 cent bet for us.
Well, that's what I'm sort of getting at. Like, yeah, he's betting 50,000, 60,000, 100,000 and all that. The guy can do it. He has the money. He's not going to go broke and then have no kids. No house, no nothing. And the kids leave him. Family leaves him. The guy has the money. He can do that. So
it's chump change. If Michael Jordan saw $10,000 on the ground, he wouldn't bend down to pick it up because he'd probably think he hurt his back.
It's interesting that Jordan, I guess he probably wanted to get the story out there. He focused on it. He was real honest about it because the reason I brought it up, because he ended up going to, they played the Knicks in the conference finals, and God damn, that was a tough series. That was some serious.
They basically took over the mantle of the bad boy Pistons. Yeah. Really? Yeah, and they had some great series against the Knicks. Like that was the new age rivalry after the Bulls had gone through the Pistons. That was next was the New York Knicks.
Yeah, and they got it wasn't even just Patrick Ewing who's, you know, big and strong in himself, but it was even that I can't remember.
Charles Oakley. Charles Smith.
Yeah, it was John, a little point
John,
guard.
John Starks, man, did he love getting up in people's faces.
Oh, he loved it.
If people out there listening to this, Google John Starks and just read his story, because his story from where he came from to him getting into the league is truly stunning. Like, I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
Interesting.
But it's his story to get into the league is unbelievable. It really is. Like, you just don't hear of those stories a whole lot anymore. And I'm sure those stories are out there, but because back then, you know, it was the Knicks, it's Madison Square Garden, it's the mecca of basketball, it's the world's most famous arena. I mean, it still is right now. That was another cultural icon back then was Madison Square Garden. Not just the New York Knicks, but Madison Square Garden, where absolute who's who of anybody, whether you're a basketball fan or not, would go and watch the Knicks. It was incredible how popular they were. I didn't quite get over the hump, which is kind of unfortunate.
I'd almost say the MSG brand's probably bigger, I think it's bigger than New York Knicks themselves.
Oh, it is. It is. That's what the pitch would be to free agents. Yeah, you know, it's not the blue and orange jersey. It's you'll be playing 41 home games where greatness has been, and not just basketball. And okay, fair enough, the Knicks haven't won a title since the early 70s.
Yeah.
But that's just what it was. You know, it was concerts, it was professional wrestling. You know, how often did Bruno Sammartino headline Madison Square Garden?
93 weeks, I think.
Yeah, it was the place to be.
The reason we were talking about that, because it ended up coming through or reporting that after that game two loss to the Knicks, that Jordan was out till 2 a.m. at Atlantic City apparently gambling. But in his words,
he says 12, the media says 2. So, you know, who do you believe?
It doesn't matter anyway. At the end of the day, he said the reason he did it because, you know, his father said, let's just get out of New York. So, yeah, they went to Atlantic City and, okay, they're betted.
Across the river. Who cares?
That's right. So there was no, you know, even the league investigated. They found no cause for concern. So then, but it snowballed. So he had to come out and sort of talk about it, I guess. He hated it because this is where he started hating.
That's right. Exactly. That was the thing that he didn't really like, was sort of that little bit of bad publicity. And that started the snowball effect of people trying to dig up the dirt on Jordan, you know, through that Knicks series, and just started to wear him down a little bit. But it goes into the book that was written by Sam Smith, The Jordan Rules, as they sort of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Who was Sam Smith's sources inside the team? But people sort of forget that beat writers are in the locker room all the time.
Yeah.
So they can have multiple sources. They can overhear things. It's not just – and Jordan just absolutely throws Horace Grant straight under the bus. Like straight up throws Horace Grant under the bus. And Horace was – he just flatly denies it.
Yeah. I'm laughing because Horace – I don't know why, but they always focus in Horace tying up his shoes, and he's got the glasses on, and it looks like it's the most awkward thing I've ever seen in a professional basketball player. But he obviously wears glasses because he needs them. But he's just got these big bloody aviator-looking ones, and my God, they were. It just looks awkward. I don't know why.
That was Horace Grant. Like, that's when you looked at him, you knew exactly who that was.
I mean. In Jordan's part of this whole thing, he did come out and had that interview with, I think it was this Connie Chung, who was big back then. And she asked him point blank if he had a gambling problem. He said, no, I can stop gambling. I have a competition problem. That was his biggest thing. He had a competition problem.
He liked gambling on golf. He likes blackjack. Who doesn't? But that's what I mean. It's not as if he's getting into some crazy sort of debt or anything like that. And there was... there was the story as well where Michael doesn't go to the White House after the 92 finals, and it sort of comes out that he was with a well-known gambler called Slim Buller or something like that. Yeah, and he was off gambling with him and
he was a golf hustler, but apparently there was a bit more to him guy. Yeah, I think he knew he was known for money laundering and things like that.
Yeah, so he was an unsavory type character, but I think Jordan, that's what I mean.
He was in the sheds, and then the security guys, that big blonde wig looking dude they were just throwing coins, and whoever can get closest to sort of the dice.
We were getting closest to the wall. Like, what was that?
That was just like
a security guard for the blonde, perm dude, that was an insane perm.
he was obviously happy winning, but just Jordan, even from that, was visibly annoyed for losing. He just does not like losing. So
tossing a coin to get closest to the wall. Like, what? Oh, man, that's.
I didn't say
it's out of control, but it's like, man, that's just putting a bet on or gambling just for gambling's sake. That's crazy.
I think it's from all that additional media scrutiny he had, it just took a toll on him hugely when they won that third consecutive championship. It's just he was getting a bit tired and exacerbated by the whole experience.
No, well, that's right, and it was the same questions like what they've done, you know, when they've done the fast forwards in episode 4, where everybody's asking, are you going to retire at the end of the year? Is this your last season? Is this your last game at the Palace of Auburn Hills? Is this your last game in Madison Square Garden? Blah blah blah. Same sort of thing here. Yeah. Do you have a gambling problem? Oh, is it true that you're out at Atlantic City till 2 o'clock in the morning? You know, this Slim Buller guy, like, you know, why are you associating with him? Like, it just wears him down.
Yeah. It wore him down so much when we were talking about before we got on, but he didn't want to speak to media at all. And Scotty was, you know, because he was number two, they were walking to the bus and there was a couple of media guys in there and Pippen
Michael wanted out. He wanted out of there. Come on, let's go. 3:30. Let's go.
Had golf tee time at 3:30. Yeah. So
he had a 3:30 tee time, and Dennis Rodman wanted to go to Hooters. So everybody had their places they wanted to go. Like, you know, that's it. Michael wanted to go, you know, onto the course, and Dennis Rodman wanted to go to another establishment. So and he's on the bus. He's beeping. He's sitting in the driver's seat beeping. Come on, hurry up. Let's go.
I'm sorry. I'm just laughing at the Rodman thing.
Man, that was great.
Jordan was betting on the golf course, but Rodman was probably laying down just as much money at Hooters. Possibly.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he would have been trying to slip 20s into Hooters shirts, and it's just like, we don't do that here. Oh, all right. This isn't Vegas. Sorry.
You think that little bit of break in between that he had before he come back and then won another three-peat, there's rumors galore about why he left, and what do you think that played a part in it?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Like, the way that this story is being told, you know, after the 93 championship against Phoenix, it just, and the other thing was too, that he had also discussed with family and his agent that he was saying that by the time he was 30, that he wanted to be a professional golfer. He wanted to try something different. And the other thing was too, was him and his father, their first sort of, you know, sporting love was baseball. And he'd always told his dad that he would love to give baseball a try. And as this sort of finishes off, you know, the Paxton shot for three, they get a three-peat. It's something that Magic never done. It's something that Larry never done. It's something that Isaiah and Joe Dumars and those Pistons never done. So he's going out absolutely at the top of his game. Mm. And as episode 7 and 8 will come out next week, these next two episodes are going to get real. Because if you know the history, you know, that's what I mean. Obviously, I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But the history, obviously, he decides to change sports. Yeah. You know, it gets extremely personal for him. You know, he's out of the game for 18 months. But that's what I mean. These next two episodes are going to be. These will be even more emotionally charged than what these two were.
There's so many rumors, and I don't believe this rumor there, but it kept popping up when I was doing some research. But and there was that rumor going around that apparently, yeah, he wanted to play baseball. Don't get me wrong, and that's seemed how it looked. But apparently, David Stern told him to have a break to sort of get over this gambling problem, and that's why he had the break in between. But I have heard things to that extent that
this was a bit of a cover up by the NBA to try and bury it, you know, to sort of get away from these gambling, not accusations, but, you know, gambling stories that just kept getting more frequent with Michael. So it's whether you want to buy into them or not, I don't buy that at all. You don't tell the face of your game, the most popular athlete in your country and getting extremely popular throughout the world, you don't tell him to go away from your sport for 18 months. You just don't do that.
I didn't believe that one. I never saw that could eventuate. And like you just said, they had that first love of baseball. I think he just wanted to see he's a world-class athlete, wanted to see how he would go.
That's right. He wanted to give it a chop, and that's the thing. And like we said, you know, you don't want to dive into it too much, but yeah, these These next two episodes are going to be super emotionally charged.
I will say, but without spoiling anything, I will say, if you've ever watched Space Jam, he does play on it nicely that, you know, he get how, you know, what happens with baseball, but, you know, I guess the movie plays in nicely that, you know, yeah, he played baseball, but they all believed he still was the basketball star that he is.
Of course, exactly. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And who wouldn't believe Bugs Bunny? Like, he don't tell no lies. Like, come on.
Of course not.
Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah. What's he done? He's got no reason to lie. Come on.
Bill Murray definitely doesn't have no reason to lie.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the most sort of, you know, famous Chicago, you know, sport, you know, celebrity sports fans that there is Bill Murray.
And he wanted to play with him. So.
And once again, who wouldn't?
Yeah, that's right. I think that was sort of how it sort of finished with episode 6. Like you said, the next two are going to be a bit more serious, so to speak. I'm sure we can find some humor.
As they sort of end it, and you know, listening to interviews with Jason Eyre, that he sort of says that they super fast track it because they go into they're about to start their first round series of the playoffs against New Jersey. And I can say the New Jersey Nets because that's who they were then. and they end up finishing the season 62-20, you know, which is pretty crazy. And the reason why he sort of didn't want to dwell too much on, you know, after the All-Star game and it's just, they were just completely and utterly dominating the league. And that second half, yeah, you know, that essential second half of the season after the All-Star break, they're just blowing everybody out. They're winning, you know, they're winning 9 of 10. They're winning, you know, 12 or 15 games as they're just blowing everybody out. And it sort of comes around to the end of the season that, okay, now the playoffs are going to start. And it's a first round, it's a first round series against the New Jersey Nets.
Yeah. It all comes down to Jordan because he owns the rights. Like what he's going to come out and say, but he wasn't too shy about the gambling stuff. So I'm assuming
he's not going to be shy about the rest. He's being as honest and as candid as he possibly can, because in this day and age, you can find things out. If he doesn't give his own honest opinion, then people are just going to go out there and dig and find that he's BSing.
And it's his legacy. That's the whole reason.
No, that's right. He's got no, once again, he's like Bugs Bunny. He's got no reason to tell a lie, maybe embellish some stories, but he's got no reason to lie to anybody. Like this is Michael freaking Jordan.
That's twice you said Bugs Bunny. Well, that'll do it for this week's podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter's at Final Play Pod. Our pods are everywhere now. So I'm going to go through all of them every week, but they're pretty much wherever you get your pods, except for Apple at the moment is where you can find it. If you've got an Android phone, you can get Podbean or Spotify or anything, basically. You can find us. We'll always have the links there.
Yeah, the link for Spotify will be up. It's probably the easiest way to do it. So get onto those. Check us out on Gimco as well. We're obviously on there as well. You can listen to us through any of their players. You can upload it straight up off the website. So, check us out. Yeah, give us some feedback. Like us on Facebook. We're going through as much sport as what we can sort of get out there for everybody, and, you know, trying to be first with stealing people's articles and posting them up for ourselves. That's what today's media is now, just stealing other people's articles. We're not doing anything different or wrong.
No. It'll be interesting which sport's going to be the first sport, or the race to be the first sport to restart again. I mean, I know we're in Australia, but to me, everything is pointing to the rugby league the NRL. They're full steam ahead.
Just give it to me. Just give it all to me.
The reason I'm saying that, I don't know about NBA and where they're, you know.
They're nowhere near getting anywhere near starting.
And to be honest, this is not against, well, it is against the NRL because they don't need to because they financially, the NBA are in a great spot at the moment.
That's right.
Unfortunately, the NRL aren't in a great spot financially. But on the other side of it, like the coronavirus is a bit out of control in the US. So, yeah, I don't.
It's still not great over there at the moment. So, you know, like they'll come out there and say, you know, stay safe and, you know, social distance and all that sort of good fun stuff. So, it's like that all around the world. So, you know, you just got to be smart about it. That's all, you know, don't be a douchebag and, you know, think of other people and instead of just yourself for once. So, yeah, not saying that's what's happening everywhere, but it just seems a lot like that is happening in the US at the moment. Is a lot of people are being extremely selfish and not thinking of the bigger picture.
It's a great way to finish it. Well, my name's Jason. I'm gonna just go Jordan 1 Smith. I've kind of feel like I know what you were gonna go.
You want them ones. You want them.
Like, I am gonna get the ones.
Get them on eBay. Get them eBay right now. My name is Miles. Bugs Bunny Plum.
Yes, I knew that was coming. That's why I didn't say. I was going to say Bill Murray, but you said Bugs Bunny enough. I'll give you that one. Have a good week, everyone.
All right. Enjoy your week and see ya.
Peace.